I'm Angela Ross, and this is SoCal Voices. We start the latest season of SoCal Voices with Mary Vensel White. She's president of the Orange County branch of the California Writers Club, an English and writing professor, an editor, and author. In this edition of SoCal Voices, Mary talks about her latest novel, Things to See in Arizona. Mary, welcome to SoCal Voices.
Thank you, Angela. It's so nice of you to have me. I appreciate it a lot.
Things to See in Arizona has been described as a blend of travelogue, romance, mystery. What inspired you to choose Arizona as the setting for this story?
Yeah, well, I have visited Arizona quite a bit. When my kids were younger, we used to go there quite a bit. My mother lived there briefly for about 8 years. And so pretty familiar with the state. My oldest son actually lives there right now in Tempe. I actually had a niece as well that went to NAU, and that kind of weaved itself into the storyline as the main character. Her kind of major focus is getting herself into NAU so she can leave the desert that she grew up in and, you know, get somewhere green, which is sort of similar to how I grew up. I grew up in the desert of California. So just Arizona is such a diverse state. And I think sometimes it gets kind of a bad rap with, you know, people just thinking of it as very hot and like the Phoenix area, but it's really so diverse and beautiful in so many ways.
When you traveled to Arizona, what were some of your initial responses to the place, especially having grown up in the desert of California?
Yeah, well, of course, the Phoenix area is quite similar to that, right? But going there on vacation is quite different than living someplace, I guess. I mean, I've grown to appreciate Palm Springs, even though much of my young adulthood, I thought, I don't like the desert. I don't like the desert. But now I like it to go out there for vacation. Would mm-hmm. I want to live there? You know, it's interesting because last weekend, actually, or a couple weekends ago, I went and sort of replicated the journey that the characters take in the book. And I stopped at a lot of the sites that they stop at. And some of them I had been to and some of them I hadn't. So that's my most recent fresh impression of Arizona. And of course, it was a vacation-y type thing, but it's beautiful. I mean, that drive from Sedona to Flagstaff, I mean, I don't know if yeah. there's anything like that anywhere, really. It's beautiful. So again, I've been down in Tucson quite a bit. I have a friend there, and that's a whole other different type of desert. So mm-hmm. I just think it's very diverse and really kind of one of our treasure states with a lot of the, obviously the Grand Canyon, but so much more than that too.
Yeah, it is a place where you really get a sense of something larger than yourself is going on, right? It's just so commanding and just so beautiful, so encompassing. So it's a wonderful setting for a story. And of course, obviously a place to live and take vacations. You know, you write yeah. for an adult audience, and this book, your latest book, is targeted more toward young adults, your first young adult novel. Talk mm-hmm. about why you decided to go down that path with this particular book.
Well, I was somewhat dragged kicking down that path at first. I started writing this novel, and I always say I thought I was doing Jonathan Franzen type things. I had so many things going on in the novel, and it was very much living up in my brain as a more of a cerebral exercise. I had so many elements, and some of them are still in there. I wanted to have, you know, someone maybe in a, you know, politics are what they are in our country, and I wanted to represent another aspect, perhaps, you know, in the book, Tuesday's mother she's a pro-lifer and she's working towards that goal. And I had some things in there about Native Americans and, you know, Rosanna's family, Tuesday's friend is from, her ancestors are from Mexico. And I had all these things. And it really became a lot of threads that ended up in a jumble. And I showed the book to a critique partner and she said, I think this is young adult. And I was very snooty about it at the time. And I thought, I don't write young adult. Like, that's preposterous. So, you know, and I put it aside. And then as the universe tends to teach you lessons, I got asked to teach a class in writing for kids and teens. And I started teaching a children's literature class. And I started learning a lot about young adult, which is an amazing category of literature. And I had four young adults in my household. I have four kids. And so all these things kind of transpired. And I eventually thought, Also, importantly, very importantly, I thought some of those topics, you know, immigration, the Native American thing, I thought, who am I to write about these things? So it was a lot of things that came together. And I thought, I think this is a young adult story. It's a story about this young adult. And once I kind of decided to recast it like that, it actually became quite easy to write. The last piece that I needed to add was, what was my connection to it as a middle-aged woman, you know? And it had to do with Tuesday and her vulnerability and allowing herself to be vulnerable. And once that last thing clicked into place and I kind of felt the voice, it became kind of easy to write, actually.
Wow, that is a wonderful insight into your journey and your process for how you go about doing things. I wonder if you would share a passage from the book that's your favorite or that speaks to you in a special way. Would you mind doing that?
Sure. Let me grab something here. So I talk a lot about, you know, like I just did with you, the voice, you know, in young adult literature, that's kind of one of the most important things, is kind of nailing the voice. And another thing that I think that kind of surprised me in writing this book was the relationship that evolved between Tuesday and her mother. Mm. And of course, now looking back, I see myself a lot in the mother, which you never see these things until later. So I like to try to read a section that sort of shows maybe a little bit of her voice and sort of sets the scene. So I'll read a little from just the first chapter.
Sure.
Chapter one, I feel the gentle pull of the pencil across my eyelid. I can't see much, just a reddish glow against black that goes on and on. Crickets are chirping outside, and Rosanna's tart, warm breath is on my cheek. Don't forget, I say, the corner, she finishes. I know, I'm doing the liquid on top. I want them like yours. I peek with my right eye. Rosanna is straddling the chair, her chest against the back. Her eyes are perfect, outlined thick at the edges and tapered to the thinnest wings. She's done her eyebrows how I like them, full and dramatic. Tuesday, she says sternly, close your eyes. Before I do, I glimpse the sky through my bedroom window. It's Friday, late June, and the Arizona twilights can go on and on, as much as every ounce of my body screams to get out of this desert. I don't tire of the cotton candy sunsets. Pink, purple, swipes of orange. But the sky can be bleak too, a wishy-washy blue with wispy half-assed clouds. Either way, I'd like to be someplace where the emptiness of the universe isn't always on display. Give me tall trees blocking the sky, some serious dense clouds, and please, snow. Up north in Flagstaff, there's snow basically all winter. Lots of snow. So the girls are getting ready to go out to a concert of their favorite band that they follow around. It's a local band that's now becoming kind of big. And they go out to the kitchen the goal is to get some money from the mom. Mm-hmm. I need to get some money. In the kitchen, Janice is dropping chunks of fruit into the professional grade blender she uses at least 5 times a day, often in the morning while I'm sleeping. Hi, Mrs. Mays, Rosanna says. Janice Mays is lean and fast like a greyhound. She practically glides across the ceramic floor and puts an arm around Rosanna's shoulders. She squints at me. Tuesday, Anne. I take a slice of banana. What? Your eye makeup is quite vivid. She reaches over to tuck some hair behind my ear, and I shake my head until it falls back against my cheek. We have an ongoing war over my hair, Janice and I. Brown and wavy like my dad's, she was always braiding it or pulling it into tight ponytails when I was younger. She'd say I look like a ragamuffin when I let it loose. Back at the blender, she forces apple slices down with a wooden spoon and looks at Rosanna. How's your mother? Good. She's happy my brother is home. How nice. Do you girls want smoothies for the road? No, I say, then add thanks. Rosanna is giving me a glare that means ask her. I give her one that means give me a minute. How was yoga? I ask instead. Janice faces us. Her highlighted hair is pulled back into a ponytail, and she's wearing jeans and a Nike long sleeve shirt that's meant for sports. Janice is tall, 2 inches taller than I am. My grandpa says I stalled out at 5'7". Everyone in our family is tall. Him, my uncle and cousins, Janice and Devin, and my brother Logan. Before I know what's happening, Janice grabs me, hugging me like I'm going on a long trip instead of out to a concert. And before I can help it, I relax against her, putting my head on her shoulder for a second. We fit. When I hug Devin, I have to reach up, and I always get poked in the face by his collarbone. I'll stop there.
Yeah.
I just was thinking about how teens are, that's how they are, right? They pull you close, and then they push you away, and they pull you close and they push you away. So I hope I nailed some of that teen voice and kind of the specifics of the relationship with her mom.
Yeah. And the scene setting, just really good. Thanks for sharing that.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. When did you first realize that you had a talent for writing?
Oh, I don't know that I've ever thought about that. I mean, I was always a big reader, and I think, I think I'm a reader and a writer. And I used to say I still am. I'm much more of a reader than a writer, which we all should be probably. I mean, I did well in school. I got A's in English, So I guess from an early age, I won a spelling bee when I was in the first grade. So I think there's a certain, innate easiness with words for me. I did not go to college right out of high school. I went to junior college for a while and then I quit. I said, this is not for me. And when I went back, I thought I would be a paralegal. And I went to this tiny school in Stockton, California, where I was living, called Humphreys College. And an English teacher, and don't we all have some angel English teacher in our stories, right? Took me aside and said, this paper is great. Have you ever thought about studying English? And everything kind of clicked into place. And I thought, the reason why I wanted to be a paralegal is because I went through a phase of reading John Grisham novels and I really liked courtroom drama. And then I was married to a lawyer, so I know for a fact that type of writing or that type of life is certainly not for me. But so I guess then is when it finally got cemented and I thought, this is something I should be doing for sure.
Were you always self-motivated? I'm sure you said you like to read. Then you had the teacher who kind of tapped you on the shoulder and said, "Hey, you've got a knack for this." Did it always take someone else kind of nurturing and pushing you along, or did you feel innately that there was just something driving you to pursue this line of work?
Well, I mean, also as a child, I wrote stories and little booklets and reports. Sometimes, one time I did a whole report on Czechoslovakia just for fun.
Oh,
I know. So I think I always
nerd.
liked writing. I just had never thought about kind of, and I had, even at the point that teacher took me aside, I had already written some short stories and things. I think that when that's the kind of creative, that's the way creativity calls you, and that's the way you can express yourself, you're going to do it one way or another. I hadn't thought per se about writing novels, but I started to after that, making it bigger. So I think it starts with kind of this urge for creativity, and then maybe you use what tools you can find or, what you're pulled with or what you're exposed to. I don't know. But I think I would, even if I had never written books, I'd be expressing myself in, long-winded emails or something, which I do also.
You're
Long
going to write
texts.
regardless. Whatever happens, you're going to write it. I do want you to touch a little bit more about your creative process and how you mentally prepare, how you get yourself in the space for writing. I've talked to writers who say that, man, I have to block out everything and then I just sort of sequester and then I'm in the room for several hours and I'm just doing this thing. And others, kind of just do it as it comes. They're kind of on a schedule, but they've got other things going on in their life. So they carve out a little time for writing and then they do that and then they go and do other things. What's your process like and what gets your juices flowing?
I wish I could say I had a process. I wish I could say I had a routine. I look at it more as like phases of my life and ways that I finished certain books or projects. I have a short story collection that I wrote during a certain period of time by taking little retreats. It was when I was still married and my kids were younger, and I would go to a hotel for a couple of days or something, My first novel that was published, I wrote while I lived in Chicago, and I had a job as a receptionist where I had a lot of free time. So it's almost like phases. Where I'm at right now with my life is that I have a lot of things I do that are cerebral. So I am actually struggling with finding time for writing. I teach and I edit, and now I'm publishing books. So I'm just doing so much mental and work with storytelling throughout the day that sometimes, and these are just excuses, but sometimes by the end of the day, all I can do is watch something meaningless. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even want to watch storytelling at the end of the day, a good movie or something. I'm like, oh no, I can't. So but as far as once you get there, novels are harder, of course, because you have to, and maybe that's part of the reason why my current novel stalled out too. I keep yearning to write stories, and I think part of that is because with a short story, you can kind of sit down in one good writing session and get out most of it or a good chunk of it. But novels, I mean, I have one in progress. I'm about 60 pages in. You got to sit down, you got to reacquaint yourself with everything and get in the whole mindset of what you're trying to do. And again, these are just excuses, but this is why I don't I have a hard time going back to it right now. I need to, though. And it's one of my constant pressures in life is to, you need to do more writing this year or this summer or this season. And they roll by, you know.
Well, when that phase comes over you again, you'll get to it. I'm sure you will. And I'm sure it'll be awesome. You know, everybody's process is a little bit different and you just have to do what works for you. You know, that's really important. Yeah. Talk about your role as an English and writing professor. What's your approach to teaching others who are pursuing this craft?
Well, my first approach would be kind of a disqualifier that I'm no expert at anything, especially in the writing side of things, right? I mean, when I teach an English class, when I'm teaching children's literature, I like to bring a lot of history to it. I was a history minor. I think history and English, those pursuits are very hand in hand because anytime you're studying the literature that came up at a certain time and place, of course, it's very tied into what was going on with history. So, I mean, I didn't study writing. I was an English major. So I always come to books from that side of it anyway, studying and researching. So for English classes, yeah, it's just getting into the text, analyzing not only the craft of it, but the, you know, backdrop. Writing classes, I like to really leave a lot of things open. And I find that, I don't know if it's been all generations, but with this generations of students, sometimes that's a struggle because they came up with so many rubrics and they want a lot of guidelines. And when it comes to writing, I'm like, I really want you to find your way in. And yes, we may be having a class that's about experimental fiction or whatever. So I want you to experiment a little with form, but I really want you, I don't want to tell you how to write it or, you know, one of the first things any student will ask you on any writing type of assignment is how long do you want it to be? And I realize like they need to know that, but I would say my approach as a professor above all is to try to kind of push them to look at things in a different way.
Do you find that they're open to doing that?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, I don't blame them. They've got six other classes. They're really just trying to make sure I work at a small Christian college that the students are very diligent and they want to do well, but I would like to, I just have one little chance with them or two or three, but I want to kind of open their minds. A lot of them come to me, especially for the children's lit class, and they say, well, I don't read much anymore. And I don't blame them because, you know, they read a lot for school. And I love that class because we're able to read like a lot of young adult and middle grade and things that sometimes get certain students kind of fired up to start reading again, which is really rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. So is there a student or a group of students that have really captured your attention because of either their eagerness or enthusiasm, their approach to what they're writing, what you've read of their work? What's got you kind of excited about a student or two that we should look forward to if they decide to continue writing well into their adulthood?
Oh, sure. I mean, I've taught lots of, all the students are talented in one way or another. And if they take a writing class, then 9.9 times out of 10, there's something there. Mm-hmm. That's why they took the writing class. There's something there. They're all different, but they all have, and I'm not trying to whatever, but there's a couple very talented students I've had the pleasure of teaching who are now back at my school actually teaching. They both went off and got MFAs.
Wow.
And one is Chase Seeley. He's super talented. Amazing. And the other one, her name is McKenna Myers. She writes middle grade. That's her passion. Mm-hmm. I had just started teaching the writing for kids and teens class when I met McKenna and she was in my class. And honestly, she could have come up and taught the middle grade section probably better than I at the time.
That's great. That's great.
But the one thing that they both have in common of what I know of them is that they're not only talented, but they're voracious readers and they're super curious and they're really hard workers. And that is kind of a lethal combination. That's the combination that's going to propel you, you know, because you'd be surprised. I'm in the writer's club, as you mentioned. I actually just took over as president, by the way, which is a whole other host of responsibilities, but
that is awesome.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. But you'd be surprised how many times you meet writers that say, I say, well, what are you reading right now? Oh, I don't read, you know, and I guess I'm a little guilty of that too right now, but I mean, come on, I'm always reading something, you know? Yeah. But if you have that combination of someone who works hard, always wants to be open and learning, and then also has some talent. But you know, talent is talent. It's you're going to nurture it and grow it, or I don't know. People have talent and don't, we all probably know people that we think, oh, what a shame they had that talent and they didn't do anything, you know? So yeah, lots of students. I one time mentored a young student who was writing a young adult fantasy, and I had a senior one-on-one with her all semester, and it was amazing, and she's amazing. And I'm actually mentoring a senior right now on another young adult fantasy book. So I've had a lot of experiences with students who are really talented.
That's fantastic. It sounds like you're getting as much from them as they hopefully are learning from you. It's a fantastic exchange, and how much we have to look forward to in terms of their work and what they have to offer others who are pursuing this creative path. I want you to think back a little bit about your writing from the time that you were very young. You said, you know, you had this thing in you, and you've pursued it, and it's been great. I wonder what you learned about yourself through this. Have you discovered something that surprised you? Are you all the way through, and you're like, yep, that's me all the way? Or was there something new? Something
I mean, different? One thing I know what you mean. One thing I always tell writers is that I'm sorry to tell you this, but you're going to write about the same things from the beginning you start writing until you draw your last breath. You don't think you are, but you're going to write about the same themes over and over and over, you know? One of the books I teach in my kids' classes, Before We Were Free by Julia Alvarez. And, you know, it's all about her coming from the Dominican Republic and obviously that very traumatic experience. And she wrote several books. She wrote children's books. She wrote the Butterflies book. And it's, you know, that's obviously very trauma oriented and her wanting to represent. But even any theme you have, I find that my themes are, you know, identity and relationships. I always say my favorite topic in any kind of storytelling is two damaged people coming together. And how is that not every story ever written? But I love that. My current novel, it's about two damaged people trying to like make it work or whatever. Was I writing about that when I was younger? Probably. I remember a reviewer in my first book, I was like in my late 20s when it published, and she said, it's interesting, I was surprised how young you were because you write like a middle-aged person. Wow. And I thought, I don't know if that's a compliment or not. I don't know. But yeah, so nothing, I guess, surprises me. It does surprise me sometimes that stuff gets in there, like I mentioned earlier. You know, yeah. I'm almost afraid to go back and read that first novel now because I don't know what I would see in it now. I probably read it, you know, 6 or 7 years ago. But every time you're going to see some, oh, there's my grandma. Like, I didn't realize I put her in there, you know. So that kind of thing surprises you. But as far as emotions or feelings, no, I know what's in here. No getting away from it.
Where can folks go to connect with you, learn more about you and about your work?
I would say the floodgate is probably through my author site, which is at maryvenselwhite.com. That will get you pretty much anywhere I am, my editing, my publishing company, my shenanigans, social media.
You have social media shenanigans?
Well, not really. Not really. Although I did hire a social media to get us on TikTok for this young adult book. And that's been kind of fun. Those book talkers are so creative and it's such a fun community because they love books. They love everything about books, the way they look and obviously what's inside of them, but very voracious readers on book talk. So it's been very fun interacting there, but no, I keep the shenanigans to a minimal. Yeah.
That's great. Well, wishing you all the best with this book, Things to See in Arizona. I hope it is as satisfying for you as the book is for everyone who reads it. Great, great, great opportunity here for people to delve into something, to take them away and to relate and identify with someone, with a couple of folks who are just trying to like you said, to make it work. So thanks so much, Mary. Yeah. Really great to chat with you. Thanks
you
for being
too.
Here.
Thank you so much for having me. Absolutely. Really enjoyed chatting with you.
Wonderful. Take care.
You too.
Thanks for listening to SoCal Voices. Show your support with a financial contribution. Visit SoCalVoices.com/support. For information about sponsoring SoCal Voices episodes, send an email to contactus@SoCalVoices.com. And don't forget, follow us on social media at SoCal Voices.